All right, there goes the recorder. Again, page 660 in your notes, chapter 45, verse 13, where we'll pick it up. As far as review, last week we began to look at Millennial Mount Zion. Here's a satellite eye view of a almost to scale. I actually think that this cube here should be a little larger. I did some more precise measurements, and actually Millennial Mount Zion is probably a slight bit larger than that. But this is a satellite view of how Millennial Mount Zion might sit with Jerusalem right here and the temple up in that area. Now, a close-up of Millennial Mount Zion, we'll be building in these details as we go along. So we started out by looking at the dimensions of the northern section of Millennial Mount Zion, 50 miles wide, 20 miles deep. In the center sat the temple, a one-square-mile compound that the temple sat within. And we also saw that this area was set aside as a living area for the priests, the Levites, who were from the family of Zadok, the faithful priest in David's day. So the priests, the sons of Zadok, who will minister in the inner court of the temple, will be living in the northern section of Mount Zion. Then we looked at the center section, 50 miles by 20 miles. This was reserved for the rest of the families of the tribe of Levi. Because of a history of unfaithfulness, the rest of the Levites will function in the outer court and help serve the rank and file Jewish people, the rest of the tribes. We also saw that 20 cities or 20, what was the word we were looking for? 20 chambers, thank you, Bonnie, were situated somewhere in the middle section. It was suggested by some commentators that they are situated along this northern edge of the center section. That would be logical, perhaps a place for the Levites to change their clothes or prepare themselves for entering the northern section. So that's a possibility. But there's 20 chambers or 20 cities somewhere in this central section. Then Ezekiel noticed a city to the south. That city would be Jerusalem. It sits in the southern section of the temple, Millennial Mount. And that southern section is 10 miles wide and 50 miles deep. Now the prince's portion, the property that would be given to David and his family was reviewed. The minority opinion placed this territory to the east and west of Jerusalem. Some commentators feel that would be the location. But myself and the majority of the commentators feel that the prince's portion lies to the east and west of Millennial Mount Zion, with the Mediterranean Sea being the western border and the rest of the territory traveling to the eastern border. All right, at that point, question. Currently, yeah, the Temple Mount, Mount Zion.
How does this compare to where they are now?
Well, Jerusalem will be in its place, we know from the prophets. Jerusalem will be raised up, we know from Isaiah, in its place. So Jerusalem is sitting approximately in the same location. It's a bigger city than the current city. The current city of Jerusalem is about 8 miles long and 2 or 3 miles wide. It would fit in that box. But the temple sits in the old city. So the Temple Mount sits in this area. But in Millennial Mount Zion, it will be quite a ways to the north.
So all the concern about where would they rebuild the temple on the Temple Mount is a moot point.
Well, it's a moot point considering the Messianic Kingdom. It's not a moot point considering the Tribulation Period. We know that a third temple has to be built, the Tribulation Temple. It will be built at the current location. But see, the problem is the Temple Mount faithful folks don't have the biblical revelation that they are building the Tribulation Temple. That temple will only stand during the Tribulation.
Why do you think God is moving it so far away?
You'll have to ask him. I just tell you what the text says. This was typical this morning. A lot of questions, And all I can say is that this is what the text says. Okay, question. Exactly.
And where in the Bible is there reference to the tribulation temple? Is that the Revelation?
Yes, we have it in the book of 1st or 2nd Thessalonians, also in Revelation, but also in the last chapter, or close to the last chapter of Isaiah.
If God isn't approved of that, why is it being built?
Why is it being built? Because,
because
it will be. That's all I can say. Why is it being built? Because the Jewish people want to rebuild the temple. The rabbis want to reinstate the Mosaic Law. They have their doctrine that the Mosaic Law is eternal.
Is it necessary for
fulfillment
of prophecy?
Yeah, because prophecy states that it will be built. The last chapter of Isaiah, let me see if I'm right there. It's either 66 or 65.
Well, that's where the abomination of desolation.
Yeah, the abomination of desolation will be sitting there. Yeshua referred to this temple when he referred to the abomination of desolation.
No, because
God does not command this temple to be built. Okay, this temple is being built at the insistence of man, not at the direction of God. Okay, let's see. Chapter 66, the last chapter of Isaiah, the first verses 1 through 6 deal with a temple that is rejected by God. Okay, we know that there are three temples approved by God: the Solomonic Temple, the Herodian Temple, the Second Temple, and the Millennial Temple. But here's a temple that's rejected by God in Isaiah 66, 1 through 6. The Tribulation Temple will stand throughout the tribulation, and then it'll be torn down. It's by Jesus, it'll be gone. Yeshua will build the Millennial Temple. We saw that in Zechariah. And let's see, I had a thought, but it just skipped my mind, out of my mind. So yeah, there is a temple that is rejected. And it'll be the third temple. That's a temple that the Temple Mount want to build today. Okay, one other question.
Is there a city about 30 miles
south of Jerusalem that is that area where the Temple Mount is? You mean a city today? Well, sure, I'm sure there is a city in that location. But this is going to be... tremendous geographical and geological changes during the tribulation. Massive earthquakes, all the mountains of the world coming down, Millennial Mount Zion being pushed up. The topology of Israel will be changed. We know some things will be recognizable. The Dead Sea will be recognizable. But we'll get into that here, but it'll be changed. So this is the best we can do right now. Okay, we'll have to see when we get there. All right? Okay. Let's see, where was I? Oh, yeah, after we took a look at this much detail on Millennial Mount Zion, an admonition was then given to the sons of David that the princes in Ezekiel's day to put off their violence, their unrighteousness, in light of the future, because the future princes of Israel will be righteous men. Start living righteously today. An application that we've seen a number of times. And the example of what living righteously looked like was your business dealings. We finished up the chapter talking about being honest weights, honest, transparent business dealings in everything you do. So that brought us to page 660 and verse 12. So now in the middle of page 660, number 7, our attention is now turned to the laws of the sacrifices and offerings that will occur up on Millennial Mount Zion. Okay, everybody there? Page 660, verse 13, chapter 45. This is the offering that you shall offer: a sixth of an ephah from a homer of wheat, a sixth of an ephah from a homer of barley. And so the first type of offering that's outlined here, the dry measure, this would be the dry products of the land, the wheat, the barley, the grains, something like that. And the measure of these dry products. Then verse 14, and the prescribed portion of oil, namely the bath of oil, a tenth of a bath from each core, which is 10 baths or a homer, for 10 baths are a homer. And then he talks about the liquid products of the land, specifically here the olive oil and the measurement for those. You can read all about those measurements on your own. Page 661, then the animal products of the land, the dry products, the liquid products, and now from the animal products of the land, the sacrifices, verse 15. And one sheep from each flock of 200 from the watering places of Israel for a grain offering, for a burnt offering, for a peace offering, to make atonement for them, declares the Lord. So now 0.5% of the flock is set aside for sacrifice. And notice this is the watering places of Israel. And literally, it would be the well-watered pastures of Israel. The emphasis here is on blessing and prosperity. One of the curses of the Mosaic Covenant for disobedience was drought. But of course, this is the millennial system, and Israel is obedient. And so one of the blessings to come upon the nation will be rain, adequate rain, and prosperity. And so the stress here is on the best quality lamb. 0.5%, the very, very best, will be offered. And then the offerings that will be provided by the nation are listed: meal offering, burnt offering, peace offering. And why? The purpose is 0.5, to make atonement for them. Now, this is not atonement in the sense of justification. This is not salvation atonement or salvation from sin. This is atonement in the sense of restoration to fellowship. This is similar to how 1 John 1:9 functions for us today. 1 John 1:9 says, if we confess our sins, he is faithful and righteous to forgive us our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. Now, is this salvation forgiveness? Is salvation justification based on confession? No, it's not. Because how many sins have I committed in my lifetime? 7 billion? Let's see, I've got 6,495,253,000 confessed. See, did I miss any of those? Let's see, I've got a few more to go, you know. Salvation is not based on confession. It's based on faith. Okay? So this is not talking about salvation forgiveness. This is family forgiveness, not justification forgiveness. This is restoration to fellowship. See, this letter was written to saved individuals, not to the unsaved. So that's the sense in which this atonement will operate. It'll be for a sense of restoration to fellowship for the sins that are committed during the Messianic Kingdom. Remember, the Jewish people who are serving in the Messianic Kingdom are going to have natural bodies with a sin nature. So there will be a measure of sin in the kingdom. And there will be a measure of sin among believers even as today. And so this has to be taken care of, just like 1 John 1 functions for us today. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes, Bonnie.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
If God made the exception, then why were they still considered defiled?
Well, with the exception, I'm sure they're okay. But if they touch any other corpse,
right,
then well, these.
But they have to go through a cleansing process.
That's true. That's right.
They said that defiled, well, right? It was an exception, so why?
Well, it was allowed. Okay, it was allowed, but still. There had to be a restoration of fellowship for that. You'll have to talk it over with God on that. Yeah, I can't answer a lot of these questions. There's no details. Yes, Todd.
What's family forgiveness?
Restoration of fellowship. That's forgiveness a believer asks.
Like horizontally with other people, or like?
No, you're in God's family. You're in God's family. Well, you do it horizontally too.
Right.
But you also, 1 John, have to do it with your Heavenly Father. You know, if you sin, then you need to confess it to your Heavenly Father and be restored. Okay, get it straightened away. Okay, same idea. Someone sins in the kingdom, they got to get it squared away with their Heavenly Father, as well as if it affects another believer as well. Okay? All righty, let's go on to the person who's going to receive this offering in verse 16. Verse 16. All the people of the land shall give to this offering for the prince of Israel. So the people are going to contribute the supplies, the dry products, the liquid products, the animal products, but they're going to give it to King David. Point two here. The recipient of the gifts will be the prince. That'll be King David. He will administer these offerings brought by the people of the land. Now, how will he administer the offerings? Verse 17. It shall be the prince's part to provide the burnt offerings, the grain offerings, and the drink offerings at the feasts, on the new moons, and on the Sabbaths, at all the appointed feasts of the house of Israel. He shall provide the sin offering, the grain offering, the burnt offering, and the peace offerings to make atonement for the house of Israel. So in verse 17, he's put in charge of these offerings, and again, they're listed there, burnt, meal, and drink offerings. So he will be the one who officially presents the offerings on behalf of the nation. Page 662, point C at the top of the page. Now, what are the occasions that David functions offering the sacrifices in the temple? Well, the occasions on which David presents the offerings are listed here. First of all, number one, the feasts. That would be a reference to Passover and Tabernacles, and we'll also see that it's a reference to Shavuot. So that's the yearly, on a yearly basis, the yearly offerings. Now on the new moons, the new moon celebration takes place on the first day of each month. So that's a monthly ritual. And then weekly on the Sabbath. The Sabbath will be reinstituted in the kingdom. That's the last day of each week. And so he will offer Sabbath offerings as well. So weekly, monthly, and yearly. And then it says, point D, David will provide four kinds of offerings. And it's listed again, sin, meal, burnt, and peace offerings. Now here's a chart that I'm going to hand out to each one of you. We're not going to go through each chart here, but it'll give you an overview of the offerings. That's a young bull. It's okay on your chart. It has dropped off for some reason on my slide here. Okay, so the sin offering, and then the grain offering, the burnt offering, and the peace offering. Now, one offering that is not mentioned in this list is the guilt offering. I don't know why it's not offered, but that's different from the Mosaic system. Under the Mosaic system, the guilt offering was offered as well, the asham. And the interesting thing about the asham is that Jesus was called an asham in Isaiah 53:10. But the Lord was pleased to crush him, referring to Yeshua, putting him to grief if he would remember himself as a guilt offering, as an asham. So Jesus was considered an asham on the cross. Why it's not listed there, I have no idea. We'll have to talk with the Lord about that. All I can do is give you the text there. So let me hand out these question. I'll hand out these five slides, and then you can, if you have a summary of offerings, you'll have a little summary here. These slides. Question, Bonnie?
No, well, no. Don't you think that if Jesus is there in the millennial kingdom, he was the good offering, so would be a need for another one?
Well, but he was also, he's also a sin offering. He's also, you know, he was our offering of atonement on Yom Kippur. I mean, he's prefigured in all these offerings. So, uh-oh, I forgot you again, buddy. Good, there we go. You got to sit over there on the other side. Anyway, yeah, he's prefigured in all these offerings. So I would expect all the offerings to be there to teach about him. But they're not. But the guilt offering is left off. Why, I don't know. Yes, for sin, for example, yeah.
Yeah. With our new bodies.
Oh, you mean with you and I today, when we go back.
When we come to the millennium, will we be a part of those who
make offerings? Yes, in the sense that you will help administer the offerings. You won't offer it for yourself because you will have a glorified body. The sin issue will be over for you. But you will be a priest and co-reign with Yeshua. And you will probably help administer some of this somehow. But I don't believe you'll be offering them for yourself because you'll be in a glorified state.
Okay? That we have a sin offering. Jesus fulfilled.
This is not for salvation forgiveness. All these offerings are to restore fellowship. All these offerings are to teach about Yeshua. Remember that chart, that three pages I gave you. Yeah, yes, Yeshua is the ultimate of all these offerings. But these offerings look back and teach about what he did, just as the Mosaic offerings look forward and taught about what he would do. These look back and will teach the unbelievers in the kingdom who are sinners.
Why wouldn't we call it a remembrance?
Well, you'll have to ask the Lord about that. I just give you the text, Don. I just give you the text. You take it up with the Lord. Okay.
What's the matter with this is we are not Jewish. And even though we are studying, this is going to be the way it is. When that curtain was rent, we thought that's the end. And it's hard to come to this now.
Well, I know. I understand that. That was the end of it as far as the offering for sin. Okay, he is the offering for sin. But there are offerings but we still sin. We have to restore fellowship, you know. And the offerings still teach. Remember, the Mosaic offerings never saved anybody. These offerings never save anybody.
The rent. 1:9, then out of focus?
No, 1:9 is to restore our fellowship with our Father.
Why would it apply then?
What?
You'll
have to talk with the Lord about that. He has the sacrificial system to make atonement. And it can't be salvation atonement because that happened at the cross and the rent veil. Okay? But this is family forgiveness. Okay? It's functioning the same way. That's 1 John 1:9.
Okay?
All I can do is give you the text. Otherwise, I'm supposing, I'm surmising. Okay? Yom Kippur is about good.
Mother's Day and Yom Kippur are the same day.
Yes, Jewish Mother's Day and Yom Kippur on the same day and get rid of all the guilt. Well, there you go. All righty. Okay. So the purpose very clearly here is to make atonement, but again, it's family forgiveness, restoration to fellowship. All righty. The New Year offering is brought out starting in verse 18. First part of verse 18. Thus says the Lord God, the first month on the first of the month, so if you look on your outline, the first month is Nisan, so it's the first day of the month of Nisan. Now under the Mosaic law, this was not a special occasion. It will be a special occasion during the Messianic kingdom. What will it be? It'll be a holy day. Second part of verse 18. You shall take a young bull without blemish and cleanse the sanctuary. So the means of setting this day apart as holy is this young bullock, this perfect young bull. Page 663. Why is this bull brought and sacrificed? To cleanse the sanctuary, point B1. Now remember, this is a ritual cleansing. We're not in an operating room here trying to remove germs. Okay, this is a ritual cleansing, and blood is going to be sprinkled here. So it's a ritual cleansing to teach about moral purity and virtue and the need for blood atonement, all that stuff, everything associated with the sacrificial system. So this is a yearly procedure unknown in the Law of Moses. This is something very different from the Law of Moses. So what will happen during this cleansing ceremony? Verse 19. The priest shall take some of the blood from the sin offering and put it on the doorposts of the house, on the four corners of the ledge of the altar, and on the posts of the gate of the inner court. So here's a diagram of our temple. The priest will begin here at the doorposts of the temple. He'll apply blood there. Then he'll move down to the altar. He'll apply blood on the corners of the ledge. And then he'll move to the inner eastern gate, and he'll apply blood at that point as well to cleanse the temple. Now, this ceremony is very, very different from the Mosaic Law. As you see in the bottom of page 663, point B. First of all, the priest sprinkled the blood before the veil in the Mosaic system. The priest never put blood on the doorposts. Secondly, when the priest applied blood to the altar, he applied it to the horns of the altar under the Mosaic system. But here it's the four corners on the ledge of the altar. Now, the bullock was used on Yom Kippur, but this is the first of Nisan. The bullock was used to sanctify the altar in Exodus, but here the bullock is being used to sanctify the entire temple. Normally a goat was used for a sin offering, not a bull. And then the animals differed. Under the Mosaic Law, in the millennium, it's a bullock here. So there's a lot of differences, and you can see why the rabbis were pulling their hair out reading this stuff, because they said the Law of Moses is eternal, it can never change. What is Ezekiel doing? Finally, page 664, there's a difference in the way the bullock is disposed. In the Mosaic Law, it's taken outside the camp, but in the millennial system, there is no mention of removing the bull. So apparently it is burned on the altar and it is disposed of within the camp. So a lot of differences there. Well, this happens on the first day of the month of Nisan, but now we'll go down the week to the seventh day of the month in verse 20 and see what happens there. Verse 20, thus you shall do on the seventh day of the month for everyone who goes astray or is naive. So you shall make atonement for the house. Now, the seventh of Nisan was not a special occasion under the Mosaic Law. But here it is a special occasion, and they go through the same procedure of anointing the temple doorway, the altar, and the inner court doorway. Now, it's important to note who the recipients of this offering are. Two recipients. Number one, point B1, for everyone that errs. Now the Hebrew word there emphasizes a mistake, an error occasioned by a weakness of the flesh. In other words, someone's going to try to follow millennial law to the T and he's going to goof. He's going to mess up. He's going to make a mistake. Well, that'll be taken care of through this offering. Because we're weak. We don't have good memories. We don't do everything perfectly. The second recipient of this offering is him that is simple. And the idea here is someone who's naive or easily deceived or confused. And so the purpose for this cleansing of the temple is to make atonement for the house. Again, this idea of family forgiveness, to get everything back in good order again in spite of our errors and confusion. So point two, it's a nice comment. It seems that atonement is being made for those who err by entering the forbidden area of the temple compound during festivals. So it's very possible someone could wander through one of these gates into the inner courtyard there, not quite realize where he is, and they're not supposed to be in there. Only Zadokite priests are supposed to be in there. So someone can make an error that way. Someone can, I can imagine a young kid going in there, not knowing what's going on, or somebody for the first time you know, kind of amazed, what's going on here, and wander into the wrong spot. Well, this will take care of that. Yes. Only the Zadokite priests are allowed in the inner court.
Why is that even after the temple?
Well, remember, we're dealing with people here, with Jewish people who have natural bodies and a sin nature. We're not dealing with believers who have a glorified body here. We're dealing with Jewish people in natural bodies with a sin nature, just like you and me. Except the sin nature isn't stirred up to the extent that we have it stirred up because of Satan. Okay, Satan's bound. Okay, so these people sin. They make mistakes. They goof. They get confused. And a holy God has to account for that. Because with him, there's no confusion, no error, no nothing, you know. His way is perfect. So when we mess it up, either by accident, then it has to be taken care of.
It's really to protect them from him.
Oh, yeah, that could be, yeah. Yeah, it's to restore the family relationship, okay? So the temple is cleansed, okay? All righty. So God will take care of our weaknesses in the kingdom. He will account for our weaknesses. He knows that we're but dust, right? He does the same thing today. He knows that we're but dust. Yes? No, these are for unintentional sins, error and confusion. Yeah, unintentional, yeah. All right, then we move to the 14th day of the month, point C at the bottom of the page, and the offerings during the Feast of Passover. We start in verse 21. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, you shall have the Passover, a feast of 7 days, unleavened bread shall be eaten. So again, we're in the month of Nisan. Here is the month of Nisan. We've talked about the cleansing ceremony that occurs on the first and seventh days, but now we have Passover, which occurs on the 14th day. And the date of Passover is the same as under the Mosaic Law. That hasn't changed. Page 665, top of the page. The Passover is specifically stated, but now it's a feast of 7 days. Under the law of Moses, it was 1 day, followed by the 7 days of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. But under millennial law, it will be a 7-day feast, although unleavened bread will still be eaten at that time. Now, there will be a sin offering associated with the Passover, starting in verse 22 with the duties of the priest, verse 22. On that day, the priest shall provide for himself and all the people of the land a bull for a sin offering. So again, as you drop down through your outline there, the prince is King David. On the 14th day of the month, King David will present this bullock for a sin offering. Point three, for himself and for all the people of the land. And this is different from the Mosaic system because there's nothing like this under the Mosaic system. Then the 7 days of the feast are outlined in verse 23. During the 7 days of the feast, he shall provide as a burnt offering for the Lord 7 bulls and 7 rams without blemish on every day of the 7 days, and a male goat daily for a sin offering. So here we're going to have 7 bulls offered, 7 rams, one each day at the bottom of the page. Page 666, top of the page. A he-goat daily, so 7 of those. And again, this is very different from the Mosaic system. The rabbis are getting bald at this point. Verse 24, and the meal offering is brought out. Verse 24, he shall provide as a grain offering an ephah from a bull, an ephah from a ram, and a hin of oil with an ephah. And so now the meal offerings that are associated with this with these sacrifices are described as well. Again, different from the Mosaic system under point 3. And so point 4 in the middle of the page, it's very clear that Passover will be observed in the kingdom. So it's a good idea to observe Passover Seders now. Get in the habit of doing it. Get some practice. Now, this is not out of sequence with the New Testament. Yeshua stated the very same thing as well at the last Passover. Matthew 26, verses 26 through 29, Yeshua said, "While they were eating," and that's the Passover banquet, "Jesus took some bread, and after blessing, he broke it and gave it to the disciples and said, 'Take, eat, this is my body.' And when he had taken a cup and given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, 'Drink from it, all of you, for this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for forgiveness of sins.'" So whenever you observe communion today in your church, you're really doing a mini Passover. This is the real essence of Passover, boiled down to the wine and the bread. Then he goes on to say, "But I say to you, I will not drink of this fruit of the vine," and that's a Jewish idiom for the Passover wine, the kosher for Passover wine. "I will not drink of this fruit of the vine from now on until," important word there, "until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." So he tells the disciples, we're going to have another Passover celebration together again, all of us, and it'll be when the kingdom is established. Yes? He'll be resurrected in a natural body, yeah. Just like the Old Testament saints are. You and I will come back with glorified bodies, but for entrance into the kingdom, the Old Testament saints will have natural bodies. Okay. I can't answer all the questions. You'll have to talk with the Lord, okay? This is the kingdom. This is the kingdom. It's not like Lazarus coming back to this world. This is coming back to the kingdom. It'll be a different world.
I'd be mad if I were.
Well, you're going to have to come back to the kingdom too. You'll have a glorified body. But you'll be right, but you will be in this kingdom, in the world too. And you'll be dealing with sinful people and counseling them and teaching them. Who knows what you'll be doing? Okay? Yeah, he'll have his natural body, yeah. That's okay, he'll be all right, he'll be fine. Not to worry, in the eternal state. He'll be okay, believe me. The Old Testament saints will be okay. All righty. Let's see, what time is it? Ooh, let's see, 7:48, we got a quick at 7:45. Okay, it's time for your break. It's going to be a little bit shorter break, so listen for the shofar, and we'll pick it up in a few minutes. Alrighty, here we go. All right, let's pick it up then on the offerings for the Feast of Tabernacles. Let's jump ahead a number of months in the calendar and settle down here on the Feast of Tabernacles in verse 25. On the seventh month, on the 15th day of the month, at the feast, he shall provide this, 7 days for the sin offering, the burnt offering, the grain offering, and the oil. So now we jump ahead from the first month of the year to the seventh month of the year, from Nisan to Tishrei. The day is specifically stated, the 15th of the month. So the feast on that date would be the Feast of Tabernacles or Sukkot or Booths. A number of names that it's known by. And he shall do the same on those 7 days. So the same procedure for the 7 days of Passover will be followed during the 7 days of the Feast of Tabernacles a number of months later. And the specific offerings are outlined on page 667. Again, sin offering, burnt offering, meal offering, the oil, etc. Now this differs from the Mosaic system in the quantity of the offerings. And there is no eighth day as in the book of Numbers, chapter 29. So this is, again, different from the Mosaic system. And this fact that the Feast of Tabernacles will be observed in the kingdom is also stated in Zechariah 14, verses 16 through 19. Speaking of the kingdom period, Zechariah writes, "Then it will come about that any who are left of all the nations that went against Jerusalem will go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and celebrate the Feast of Booths, or Tabernacles." Sukkot is the Hebrew. "We'll celebrate Sukkot, and it will be that whichever of the families of the earth does not go up to Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, there will be no rain on them." So you see, in the kingdom, Yeshua will reign with a rod of iron. And the reason he has to reign with a rod of iron is because there's a measure of sin in the kingdom. And here we have nations that may be objecting to sending a delegation to Jerusalem for the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, the Feast of Tabernacles will be mandatory for the nations of the world during the Messianic Kingdom. It was not mandatory during the Mosaic period, but it is mandatory during the Messianic Kingdom. So let's go on here. Egypt is then singled out. If the family of Egypt does not go up or enter, then no rain will fall on them. That's the discipline, the curse they receive, drought. And that would be devastating for Egypt. It will be the plague with which the Lord smites the nations who do not go up to celebrate the Feast of Booths. This will be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all the nations who do not go up to celebrate the Feast of Booths. So when you guys come as part of the delegation, you can spend the 7 days with me. I say every time, you're welcome to spend the time with me. All right. Chapter 46. We're now on page 667 in the middle of the page. And our attention is now taken back to the temple itself. Point E in the middle of the page, we start with the law of the Eastern Gate. Chapter 46, verse 1. "Thus says the Lord God, the gate of the inner court facing east shall be shut the 6 working days, but it shall be opened on the Sabbath day and opened on the day of the new moon." So notice point A1, 1A I should say. Who's speaking? God himself is speaking. And he directs our attention to the inner eastern gate. And he says, it is going to be closed except on 2 occasions. It'll be opened at the bottom of the page there, C1, on the Sabbath, one day during the week. And this will be outlined in verses 4 and 5. And it'll be open one day during the month during the new moon. So here, remember, the outer eastern gate was permanently shut and will remain permanently shut throughout the entire 1,000 years of the Messianic Kingdom. We're talking about the inner gate now, the inner eastern gate. It will be open on specific days. Yes, the Shekinah glory went through it, and then it was stated that this will be shut because the God of Israel has gone through it. Yes. Now, page 668, point 2 at the top of the page, we have the relationship of David the prince to the inner eastern gate. Verse 2, "The prince shall enter by way of the porch of the gate from outside and stand by the post of the gate. Then the priest shall provide his burnt offerings and his peace offerings. He shall worship at the threshold of the gate and then go out. But the gate shall not be shut until evening." So here's David in the outer court. He will enter the eastern gate from the outside. But David, don't go too far! Take it out! Oh, there. Whew. He stopped in time there. Okay. So he can go to the inside of the gate and he can present the offerings formally to the Zadokite priests who are there. And then the Zadokite priests will do the formal slaughtering and flaying of the pieces and burning them on the altar. Toward the bottom of the page, Again, it's repeated. Point D, he'll worship at the threshold of the gate, again, on the Sabbath each week, and on the new moon days each month, one day of the month. And then, of course, he will leave. And, of course, he will go back through the same entrance that he came in. So David will do that quite often during the Messianic kingdom. Now, page 669, at the top of the page, the statement is made that the gate will not be shut until the evening. And we'll see in the next verse, this is for the people of the land to use the gate. Verse 3. The people of the land shall also worship at the doorway of the gate before the Lord on Sabbaths and on the new moons. So this gate is left open for the people in the land to again to come in and go as far as the inner court and worship the Lord, observing what is happening in the inner court. And then when the sun sets, then the gate is closed for that day or that week or that new moon offering. Now the offerings for the Sabbath are outlined starting in verses 4 and 5. Question.
What kind of worship were you doing on the Sabbath day? How would that be?
Well, it's very possible he could be prostrate before the Lord, down on his face before the Lord, praying and thanking him for his mercy and forgiveness. Well, he's administering the offerings. All these goats and bulls and grain offerings, etc., there'll be probably people handing them to the Zadokite priests. But he's the official administrator, overseeing the fact that the offerings do go into the inner court, and that the priests then begin to administer them, take care of them. Well, the people will come in through the northern and southern gates. Yes, there will be sacrificial tables located here and here. Okay, but this is David's role. Now, the other gates are not mentioned in regard to the sacrifice, so we don't know exactly what the role of those gates will be. The people may offer sacrifices here and offer them in the northern gate as well, the southern gate. But this is dealing with David and the Sabbath offerings. Okay, not the peace offerings or general offerings by the people.
So he can bring
the offerings to them. He will oversee the bringing of the offerings, yes. He probably won't physically hold them himself. He might hold one. He can't, you know, he's not going to take a bull and, you know, take seven bulls and all that. Yeah, he's a Judean. He can't go in there. Yeah, only Zadokites from the family of Zadok of the tribe of Levi can go in there. Did I see another hand? Yes. Yeah, there is no mention here.
At all.
Whether it that doesn't mean it. That's an argument for silence to worry about, to think it won't be there. It's very possible it could be there. Don't assume that there won't be singing. Yeah. Nothing is mentioned, so that's all I can say. Yeah. But I would not assume that it's not part of the services there. I would not assume that at all. But it's not in the text. Okay. All righty. Okay, so we have, let's see, did I, the people in these, did I do verse 4 here? Okay, now the burnt offering on verse 4, again, varies. Did I read verse 4?
No,
okay, verse 4, the Sabbath offerings. The burnt offering which the prince shall offer to the Lord on the Sabbath day shall be 6 lambs, without blemish, and a ram without blemish. So here we have the number of offerings offered on the Sabbath. This is different from the Mosaic law. The Mosaic law, only 2 lambs were offered, not 6 plus a ram. So again, very different. The meal offering associated with the Sabbath, verse 5. And the grain offering shall be an ephah from the ram, with the ram, and the grain offering with the lambs, as much as he's able to give, and a hin of oil with an ephah. So again, these are the meal offerings associated with the animal offerings. And again, this is different than the Mosaic Law. Under the Mosaic Law, remember, there were two male lambs rather than six. And here, under the Mosaic Law, only 2/10 of an ephah. And here we have a full ephah being offered. So the details are really quite different. And again, for detail-oriented rabbis, this is a tough piece of meat to chew on. All right, the offerings for the new moon are then outlined, starting in verse 6. On the day of the new moon, he shall offer a young bull without blemish, also six lambs with a ram, which shall be without blemish. Now again, the differences between this and the Mosaic system. In this system, we have one young bull. Under the Mosaic system, the new moon offering was two bulls. Here we have one young bull, then in the past it was two bulls. In this system, we have six lambs. Under the Mosaic system, it was seven lambs. Under this system, one ram. And that's the same as the Mosaic system, one ram. All of these will be without blemish, perfect animals physically. So this is different from the Mosaic system. Then the meal offering is brought out, verse 7. And he shall provide a grain offering, an ephah with the bull, and an ephah with the ram, and with the lambs as much as he is able, and a hin of oil with an ephah. Again, this is different from the Mosaic system. Here we have an ephah with the bullock. Under the Mosaic system, it was 3/10 of an ephah, less than half. An ephah here, 3/10 under the Mosaic system. An ephah with the ram under the Mosaic system, it was 2/10 of an ephah. So again, quite a bit less. And for the lambs, according as he is able, but under the Mosaic system, 1/10 of an ephah was specified. Then the laws of the prince's entrance and exit are reiterated again in verse 8, chapter 46, verse 8. When the prince enters, he shall go in by way of the porch, by way of the porch of the gate, and go out by the same way. So at the bottom of the page there, again, it's talking about the Sabbath day and the new days. And it's repeated that that David will go in, that he will only go as far as the inner court. He will not step over into the inner court. And then he will return, exit, by the same way. This emphasizing the sanctity of the inner court and the fact that he is limited. He gets special privileges, but they only go so far. Now, for the people of the land, verse 9, page 671. But when the people of the land come before the Lord at the appointed feasts, he who enters by way of the north gate to worship shall go out by way of the south gate. And he who enters by way of the south gate shall go out by way of the north gate. No one shall return by way of the gate which he entered, but shall go straight out. So when the people come, I have missed something here. Verse 9. Did I just read verse 9? Yes. When the people of the land come before the Lord on the appointed feast, point A in verse 9, the appointed feast, point B, would be the pilgrim feast, Passover weeks, and tabernacles. So here we see that probably the Feast of Weeks will be part of the worship year, Shavuot, and this is the same as under the Mosaic system. And that's in Deuteronomy 16:16, the appointed feasts. Three times in the year all your male shall appear before the Lord your God in the place which he chooses. Then their name, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, at the Feast of Weeks, Shavuot, and at the Feast of Booths, Sukkot. So that will be the same as the Mosaic system. But there'll be an awful lot of people in the temple area during those times because that's the pilgrim feasts, when all Israel is to gather there. So it's going to be crowded in the temple. And so the Lord has instituted an organized entry and exit system. Anyone coming from the north will enter through the north gate. They will spend their time in the outer court worshiping, and then they will exit through the south gate. And the exact opposite is true for those entering through the south gate, in through the south gate, worshiping in the outer court, doing whatever they will be doing, and then exiting through the north gate. In other words, neither of those gates will be clogged with everybody trying to get in and or out one of them, but there'll be an orderly flow similar to the way our freeways run. I don't know if a Southern California freeway is a good example, but at least you got traffic going in one way on one side and one way on the other. Anyway, questions? Oh yeah, there'll be a lot of walking there. Well, remember, this is the kingdom. This is the kingdom. People are in natural bodies are going to be allowed to live a very long time. Remember, Moses lived to be 120, right? And he wasn't, there was no diminishing of his physical abilities, it says. Yeah, people confused or naive, there'll be different intellectual abilities. Yeah, there'll be people with different intellectual abilities, young children and old people. So there'll be different levels of experience. But that won't be a problem. Okay. So anyway, an orderly system of going inside, going in and out of the temple area. Everything God does is in good order. Page 672. Some regulations for the prince when he goes in and out. Verse 10. When they go in, the prince shall go in among them, and when they go out, he shall go out. And the idea is point B, that he will use the northern and southern gates as well, just as one of the people. Now, the offering for the people is outlined in verse 11 on page 672, point 4 in the middle, verse 11. At the festivals and the appointed feasts, the grain offering shall be an ephah for a bull and an ephah for a ram, and with the lambs as much as one is able to give, and a hin of oil with an ephah. And so again, at the major festivals, the yearly observances of Passover, weeks, and tabernacles, at the fixed occasions, which would be the Sabbath, point A there, the weekly observance and the new moon observance, the meal offerings for each sacrifice are again repeated. Page 673. The offering for the prince. Verse 12. When the prince provides a free will offering, a burnt offering, or peace offerings as a free will offering to the Lord, the gate facing east shall be open for him, and he shall provide his burnt offering and his peace offering as he does on the Sabbath day. Then he shall go out, and the gate shall be shut after he goes out. Now, these are not specified offerings in the millennial system. These are free will offerings, something that David decides to do on his own. So they can either be a burnt offering or a peace offering. And if he does that, then that inner eastern gate right here will be opened specifically for him. Because he's the prince, so he gets a privilege of having the gate open for him. And just as he offers on the Sabbath day, he'll make these offerings and then he goes out. And then it states the gate will be shut. So this gate is opened and closed specifically for him when he has a free will offering to give to the Lord. All right, page 674. Top of the page, we come to the daily offerings that are part of the millennial system. We begin with the daily sacrifice in verse 13. Thus they shall provide the lamb... Excuse me, verse 13. And you shall provide a lamb a year old without blemish for a burnt offering to the Lord daily. Morning by morning you shall provide it. So a one-year-old lamb, a lamb that I don't think it has, it won't be on its birthday. It means a lamb that is between 1 and 2 years old. So a one-year-old lamb will be offered, a perfect lamb, and it'll be offered daily, every day for 1,000 years. A lamb will die. That's a lot of lambs. It'll be offered every morning. This is different from the Mosaic system. The Mosaic system had a morning and evening sacrifice, a daily morning and evening sacrifice. Here, it is simply a morning sacrifice. Then the meal offering in verse 14. You shall also provide a grain offering with it morning by morning, a sixth of an ephah and a third of a hin of oil to moisten the fine flour, a grain offering to the Lord continually by a perpetual ordinance. So this offering also accompanies the lamb each morning. And again, this is a little different from the Mosaic system. Point 2, Roman numeral 3, you can read in Exodus and Numbers 28. So again, the meal offering will accompany this sacrifice for every day for the 1,000 years of the millennial kingdom. Page 675. The daily offering is now summarized in verse 15. Thus they shall provide the lamb, the grain offering, and the oil morning by morning for a continual burnt offering. So again, every day for 1,000 years. Now point J in the middle of page 675, our focus is now on the land holdings that will be owned by David that lie east and west of the Holy Oblation. So here we have again the one border being the Mediterranean Sea, the other border being the eastern border of the land. Back to our satellite view. Now, if my millennial Mount Zion is accurate, that means there's going to have to be topographical changes to the coastline, geographic changes that will give David a little bit of territory there. Probably will be, because if you're going to push up millennial Mount Zion, you're probably going to bulge out the coastline of the land of Israel. So there'll probably be some kind of a change there. We know there will be great topographical changes. When we get to describing the Dead Sea, we'll see that the Dead Sea will be recognizable, but it will have to be changed due to the presence of millennial Mount Zion. We'll see that as well. All right, now, the law concerning his sons. Now, it says 46:18 in your outline. Change that to 46:16. That's a misprint. Verse 18 is incorrect there. It should be 46:16. So, verse 16. Thus says the Lord God, if the prince gives a gift out of his inheritance to any of his sons, it shall belong to his sons. It is their possession by inheritance. So David has the right to divide up his land among his children, and his sons would be those who are saved and also resurrected, such as Solomon on point A2 there. So, if they are given a portion of land by their father, it becomes their personal possession for the 1,000-year Messianic kingdom. But on page 676, that'll be different for the servants. David will not have the right to give away his land to his servants in verse 17. But if he gives a gift from the inheritance to one of his servants, it shall be his until the year of liberty. Then it shall return to the prince. His inheritance shall be only his sons. It shall belong to them. So while he can give a gift permanently to a blood relative, not so with a servant. The person who receives a gift of land will be able to use that land until the year of liberty. That's a reference to the year of Jubilee. And that's when the debts are remitted, the land returns to its owner. And there'll be 20 Jubilee years during the kingdom period. It occurs once every 50 years. So the maximum amount of time a servant can utilize the land will be for 50 years. And this is very similar to the law of Moses. The servant could use the land until the year of Jubilee there. But as far as permanent possession, it will be for David's family.
son that he lost that was sent with Bathsheba would be one of the sons?
I can't answer that, Don. I can't answer that, okay? I believe babies who die go to the presence of the Lord, so it's very possible, yes. Question?
So David is going to have his old natural body again, the one right?
He will have a natural body.
So he can have more children?
It's possible, yes. It's possible.
And women?
Huh?
Women?
There will be children. There will be... There will be children in the kingdom. There will be children born in the kingdom. Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes, I will have a little piece of land, but that's coming up. Okay. You will be co-reigning with Christ in your glorified body. I don't know where you will be. Actually, I like Upper Galilee, so we'll see if there's such a thing. Okay, no, you will have a glorified body. You'll be co-reigning somewhere on planet Earth. Where and what you'll doing would be up to the Lord. Because all Jewish people will be living in the Promised Land. That's where we will be. That's true. That's why you'll be. That's true, but the promise of the physical land is not to the Gentile peoples, not to the grafted in believers, it's to the Jewish people. So I will have a little bit of territory. Your territory will be worldwide. All right, we got to move on. One more question. Well, Irma has discovered that she's Jewish, or probably is, because all the towns in the area where she was born in Mexico were settled by Sephardic Jews, and all the names she has discovered of those people are in a research paper done by a professor. They're all Sephardic Jewish names. So Irma probably is Jewish, as are other people that have come into this class from Hispanic backgrounds, from Mexican backgrounds. Yeah, very possibly. So research out your backgrounds. You might be surprised. All right, we're going to move on because I promised you I'd get through this chapter, and I did this morning. All right, in light of the fact that David and his sons will own property, there's a reminder in verse 18 that this is not to lead, this should prevent any kind of expropriation of the land from the other people. Verse 18. The prince shall not take from the people's inheritance, thrusting them out of their possession. He shall give his sons inheritance from his own possession, so that my people shall not be scattered, everyone from his possession. So the rank and file Jewish people will have their own tribal territory, their own family plot throughout the kingdom. We'll get to that in the last closing chapters here. But David will not be able to take it for himself. So my little property, my little bit of property is safe. It will be mine for 1,000 years. Page 677, we now take a look at the boiling places where the sacrificial meal for the Zadokite priests are cooked. And there'll be two locations for these kitchens. We begin in verse 19. Then he brought me through the entrance, which was at the side of the gate, into the holy chambers for the priests, which faced north. And behold, there was a place at the extreme rear toward the west. Now, the last time we talked with Ezekiel, he was in the inner court. So now the angel takes him to the outer court and over to this area of the temple somehow. And he's taking a look now at these rooms to the extreme west of the temple area. These are the kitchens where the Zadokites will cook their holy meals. So let's look at verse 20. He said to me, "This is the place where the priests shall boil the guilt offering and the sin offering, and where they shall bake the grain offering, in order that they may not bring them out onto the outer court to transmit holiness to the people." So here in these kitchens, the Zadokites will cook their meals and eat their meals in these dining rooms and kitchens. Now this is very similar to the regulation that was placed upon them regarding their garments. They were to change their garments in these locker rooms as well, to maintain the distinction between the sacred and the secular. So they are they were not to transmit holiness to the people. They're not to take the meals and eat them in the outer court, but to maintain this clear distinction between the sacred and the secular. Okay, that makes sense? Same idea as with their clothing. Now, the Levites will also benefit from the offerings. They will be supplied with food from the offerings. And now in verse 21, the provision for the Levites is outlined. Verse 21. Then he brought me out into the outer court and led me across to the four corners of the court. And behold, in every corner of the court, there was a small court. All right, so Ezekiel is somewhere over in this location. And now he's taken to the four corners of the outer court, and he sees these little tiny courts, each one of them labeled on this diagram with an H. And he has quite a bit of a hike here. It's about 800 feet along each side of the temple. And so now these four little courts are described. There, first of all, they were measured. Each time he came to one of them, the angel measured them. The measurements are brought out in verse 22. In the four corners of the court, there were enclosed courts, 40 cubits long and 30 wide. These four in the corners were the same size. So these four little courts are 70 feet, 0.2 by 52 and a half feet, 0.3. So all of them are identical. On page 679, page 23 at the top, it's kind of hard to understand exactly what he's describing here, but he's describing the kitchens in some way. There's counters and barbecue pits, boiling pits for fires inside these courts. And they're described in verse 23. There was a row of masonry round about in them, around the four of them, and boiling places were made under the rows round about. So here we have on the edges or some way associated with the courts, these fireplaces where the pots full of water were placed. And that tells us that the little courts were apparently roofless, 0.4, no roofs to allow the smoke from the fires to ascend out of these little kitchens. Now, why are these kitchens set up? Verse 24. Then he said to me, "These are the boiling places where the ministers of the house shall boil the sacrifices of the people." So the ministers of the house are the those who are the caretakers, point A, 1 and 2, that would be the Levites who function in the outer court and who serve the people. So the people's offerings, they would be allowed to eat. The people's peace offerings would be theirs and provide for their needs. All right, that brings us then to page 680, and we come to chapter 47. And in chapter 47, we'll move outside the temple, and we'll begin to look at more details regarding Millennial Mount Zion and the... One of those details we'll look at on point E in the top of page 680 is the Millennial River. So we'll cover that next week. Hopefully, I don't know exactly when I'll be done with the book. I'm hoping to be done by the end of next month, four more sessions at the most. So we'll see how it goes, you guys. All right, let me pray and then we'll turn you loose. Father, the thing that strikes me tonight is the many, many questions we have regarding the details of the temple, the details of the offerings and the sacrificial system, the meals. And we wonder, what exactly is life going to be like in this messianic kingdom? And I suspect that you've deliberately done that so that we will ponder your word, meditate on your word, read your word, and think about it. And ask you about it, and anticipate looking into the future and seeing and experiencing exactly what life will be like in the kingdom. We know it is going to be great. We know it will be very different from the day-to-day existence we have today. So again, Lord, help us to use this section of Scripture to turn our eyes to you and to the future and to the glorious future you have for all of us in the Messianic kingdom, and then in anticipation to look forward into the eternal order. So use this in our lives in this manner. We ask this in Yeshua's name. Amen. All right, we'll see you guys next week.